I know it's uncomfortable. Just keep on coming in. That's right.
Now we've got you!
No, it's We Hate Movies Rerun episodes, everybody. We're doing these. They're fun, right?
Yeah, I'm having fun.
I'm Steven Sadak. This is my pick. This is my Reading Rainbow. I'm going to do a Reading Rainbow style. I'm going to hold up a book and stare awkwardly. The movie I picked is Tough Turf. It's the toughest turf around. It's an episode that we did, and Chris Cabin's on it, and it's great.
Steve, it sounds like you didn't even listen to this episode.
No, it's a super fun one. It's a movie that I found on Netflix like a year and a half prior. And I remember that I was talking this up for months that they were going to do it. And I was super excited because it blew me away. It was one of those like, what are we going to watch when we're making dinner kind of movies? And then like dinner just burned because I was like, wait. This is fantastic.
You put a hole in your kitchen wall because you're watching Tough Turf.
I actually worked for a summer at a summer camp.
Oh, really?
That's terrifying.
Really? Yeah. You know, that is terrifying. Yeah, you don't want this guy in power. And the guy running the summer camp, Mr. Paul Monez, who played Nick the villain in this movie.
Oh, shit.
So I actually knew this fellow. I wasn't on the episode. I didn't get to talk about it. There's not much to talk about, but...
What kind of a camp counselor boss was he?
Very manicured.
Oh, yeah.
He had posters of his movies in his office.
Was there a Tough Turf poster?
No. He had a poster of a movie called The Beat, I believe, which is something he was more involved in as a writer. He also wrote...
Good Will Hunting. That's Ben Affleck.
I think Double Team with...
Oh, seriously? Yeah, the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie?
He's been involved in some type of... One of the Jean-Claude verses...
That's fantastic.
But yeah, no, that's the whole story. Nothing that interesting.
I love this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a fantastic movie. What bothers me, and every time I think about it, like now, in a situation where I can't do it, but I'm like, God damn it. I have to go on eBay and find the Tough Turf LP.
Yep.
Because there's like, we'll get listeners who will be like tweeting directly at me. Like pictures of themselves with the LP, like, look what I'm doing this weekend, fuck face.
Yeah.
Like, it's somehow the internet knows that I don't own this album, and all I want is this album.
Yeah, you got to do that, and you got to get Jim Carroll's Catholic Boy on LP, which I do own because of this.
Oh, by the way, somehow I forgot this, but it was a live action role playing camp.
Dude, that is a detail I need up front.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. That kind of, I buried the lead.
A live-action role-playing camp? Okay, that's a fucking episode in and of itself.
What I was doing at that camp was they hired me to like film the kids and stuff for like a promotional video for the future of the camp or whatever.
That's what Jeffrey Jones said, by the way. They hired me to film the kids.
But okay, so during one of the epic battles, I was filming the kids. And one of the counselors who was like super into the LARPing like pulled me aside and was like, you were fucking ruining the magic of this moment.
My God.
And like, yeah, he gave me a talking to.
That's a stern talking
to. But were you like, hey, the fucking guy from Tough Turf hired me to film this shit.
Yeah, and what am I going to do? Run and cry to a movie villain? I don't think so.
Wait, so it was like what? Like wizards and shit?
Yeah. Ugh. Wizards and swords and, yeah, you know.
I'll stay home with a nice ice-cold glass of water if you get my drift.
And watch some Tough Turf. We now join We Hate Movies, already in progress. This is one we've been sitting on for quite a while. I was like, it's not ready yet. It's not ready yet.
You don't want to take that bread out before it's ready.
Well, we're just like a bunch of, you know, mother hens just laying on that egg, just waiting for it to come out.
And honestly... Because we've known this one's been coming up for a while, and I was just kind of like, man, get through January. Slug through all those new movies so we can go back to the 80s where we belong.
Because this is like an alternate... If this movie is 50% more normal, this would have been on everybody's like TBS growing up. Everybody would have grown up with this movie. Yeah. But I mean, I'm sure some people did, but nobody grew up with this movie.
Some people may have grown up with this movie, but no one grew up with this movie.
Some equals none.
The film, in the very most boiled down way I can give it to you, is James Spader plays a teen who's just moved to an L.A. suburb. And he's having trouble fitting in at school, runs afoul of a gang, and falls in love with the gang leader's girl.
It's really weird because he's dark and smart.
Yeah,
it's a very odd thing.
Yeah, there's the patented, you know, Donnie Darko scene. Your Iowa test scores are intimidating. Like, yeah, that whole old gag.
The Iowas. Oh, God, the Iowas. And then he's got, like, they show his bedroom at one point, and it's all, like, heady literature and philosophy books all over the place.
He's reading. He's doing a lot of extracurricular reading, but he won't do the assignment. He's not going to read Huck Finn. He read that in the fourth fucking grade.
Oh, yeah. No, he's got, like, a couple of notebooks with him. There's nothing but doodles.
Yeah, I mean, he probably schooled the Iowas, but those Regents, man. He just wrote, like, Metallica rules on it and just fucking handed it in.
No, he wrote a very long poem on the back of every piece, and they're like, wow, you're really something.
You've done it.
I mean, I'm going to have to fail you for the class, but you're really deep. By the way, you know you are in for a wild ride right at the start of this flick. You know why? Three words, New World Pictures. My God, if that is not the WHM fucking seal of approval.
I mean, we should have, because, I mean, we rewatch most of the movies here, and when that comes up, there should just be like an alarm in your table that just comes up and whirls around.
It's an alarm that just pops up and it says, you're in for a treat.
I kind of wanted to be like the Pee Wee Herman's, ah, you said the secret word! Ah, New World Pictures!
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, we start out in like a weird, like, it starts out a lot like a bit, it's like Death Wish mixed with the first Ninja Turtles movie.
Yeah, that's a good call. As zany as that sounds, everybody, that's actually pretty accurate.
Because it's just like edgy teens and like a little, it's like grimy and dark, and you're like, okay, what's going on here?
Mary and Faithful's playing in the background for reasons I can't even begin to understand.
And just like in the first Ninja Turtles movie, someone could be raped at any second.
Oh, yeah, you can just, there are some dark corners in that movie. Like,
there really are. Like, I get he's a teenage turtle mutant, but Raphael gets beaten almost to death.
And fucking April O'Neil gets slapped in the face. It's just that, like, we have a message for you, Miss O'Neil. You're like, oh, what's it going to be? Is it going to be like a you're dead? No, they're going to slap that woman right in the face. Okay, I guess so, sure.
What's more threatening than a slap across the face? Because a slap's like, wow, that's bad. It could have been a punch, but the punch is the next step.
Yeah, exactly. I learned a lesson today, I guess.
So James Spader is, what is his name?
Morgan.
Yeah, he's Morgan in this movie. You know, tall, dark, and handsome. And by the way, the thinnest he's ever been.
Oh, he's chiseled from the gods.
And I mean, you know, we're not going to rag on him for being puffy 50-year-old James Spader now. Let's get it out in the open. No one in this room is a Spader hater. Everybody is on the Spade train.
Absolutely pro Spader. Always have been.
Any form he takes, if he's fat as fuck, I'm all about it.
So long as he has that veneer of I couldn't give a shit if you lived or died, I'm on board with James
and
Spader.
You know, honestly, that's not going anywhere.
No.
He's never going to play the father to a young boy in a Christmas movie. No. You know what I mean?
If he does, you know it's the last days of Spader.
And look forward to it at our Christmas time.
Or it's the last days of his son because he's going to snap on Christmas and kill him. He is a kid who likes to ride a bike around a lot.
Yeah,
because it's like he's a transplant from Connecticut, right? The whole thing, by the way, the other whole, the economic side to this is he's a rich boy from Connecticut whose father, his business collapsed. And for some reason, they moved across the country to, you know, L.A. suburbs. They're kind of slumming it.
He's kind of got a Buffy Summers thing, too. It's like, oh, you don't do that at your last school. You know, you better look out.
Do you think Morgan at his last school, you know, kind of destroyed a Hellmouth sort of a thing?
He could be a Slayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I think, I mean, he's definitely, I'm not saying it's drugs, but it's something that they probably thought was drugs.
Yeah, yeah. So this scene that we were talking about, we're opening up. It's like a, you know, it's a nighttime street scene. There's like a seedy newsstand going on. And this scene tells us everything we need to know about this movie, right? Because it's like dark. Someone could be raped at any second. You know, there's hoods all over the place. And there's this old man waiting for the bus. Sexy teen comes out. Which, by the way, I'm watching this movie last night. Instantly, the credits are on. This chick pops up. My wife goes, she's a Real Housewife of Beverly Hills. And she's also Paris Hilton's aunt, which is just... That, those are things you don't want to own up to.
She's in Tough Turf.
Did she get into a lot of good Spader stories on that show? I remember James. And now she's 109 years old, apparently.
You know what, though? She looks like she's 109 years old. I'm so sure. It's pretty accurate. No, it's kind of sad because I've seen a few episodes of the one that she's on because that was the same show as Kelsey Grammer's horrific ex-wife.
Oh, shudder.
And it's just, I mean, they're all the worst fucking people imaginable. But she's like also kind of crazy. Now.
Well, the issue is that they all kind of just look like fried chicken drumsticks.
Yeah, no,
that's kind of the look they go for now.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So she's hanging out, and then the whole thing is like James Spader swoops in on his bicycle. They're about to rob this guy. They're like in the process of mugging him at knife point, and Spader cycles on through, and it's the first of two times in this movie he's Batman.
Yeah.
And he swoops in, grabs a beer. It's all fluid, right? Like grabs this beer can like he's done it 1,000 times, grabs it out of this dude's hand, shakes it up, blinds the muggers. The dude accidentally spray paints his boss in the face. Like it's all really choreographed.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the Karate Kid meets Death Wish. Again, like it's everything meets Death Wish in this movie. But I just don't understand why he's a vigilante in the beginning. And like the end, I understand it, but like in the middle, he's not a vigilante. He's not like, hey, Robert Downey Jr., we got to clean up the streets of this town.
Well, because it takes something specific. Like, you can't just, hey, I'm freewheeling it and I'm just going to break up this robbery. Like, that's like a heroic thing. You do it because you're a hero. And like, you do it because, like, oh, that's somebody's getting hurt. I'm going to help him. He walks in, he's singing Bebop Baloo Bop, This Is My Baby.
Yeah.
And then he's just like strolling on by, gonna stop this robbery with seven people.
I guess he's just trying to find some action, you know?
Well, that's the thing, right? It's like he's so bored mentally. His intellectual prowess is such that, you know, he's bored by regular schooling. He's bored by his home life. He's bored when he's done reading his philosophy books. He's just got to go out and fuck it. I'll fight some crime, whatever.
Then why not just buy a Bic lighter, put your palm over it, and just get it over with then? Jesus, oh, man.
What is this, junior high? He's past that at this point.
He's past the cutting stages.
So, yeah, he breaks up this robbery, and then, like, and it's all grimy dark, and then we're at the beginning of a teen movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's waking up, and he's like, now, Jimmy, don't be late for your new day at the new school.
And that's when you realize the problem with this movie is that it is four movies in one, right? It's your vigilante Death Wish movie. It's your teen movie. The way he dresses and acts in some of these school scenes, I said this to you yesterday, Steve. He's like Marty McFly without any of the time travel. You know what I mean? Like, he kind of flawlessly gets this babe to be attracted to him, you know, like kind of just walking through days, like not really giving a shit about anything.
But he doesn't have any of that McFly charm. He's just kind of like a jerk who keeps to himself.
Let's not mince words here. I'm sure James Spader screen tested for Marty McFly and
it was just like,
why is he making fun of Doc? Like, that doesn't seem right.
That's not in the script. Like,
why is everything so sarcastic?
Oh, yeah, great. You made a time machine out of a DeLorean.
No.
Whoop-dee-doo.
No, you can't rub Strickland's head. No, that's not what we're doing here. No, stop.
He gets called into the principal's office day one, and this dude is just like, he's giving him the whole Donnie Darko speech, like your Iowa test, blah, 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 and he's just like wearing sunglasses. Yeah. And the principal has to be like, would you mind taking those off? I like to look people in the eye when I talk to them.
He's got a Bantam paperback in his hand just hanging out. Next.
There's a line in that little back and forth, though, that makes no sense. He's looking through a file. I don't know what file this is. Like his FBI file, I guess.
Uh-huh. I don't think you have a file at school. But I think that's a bunch of bullshit.
Those permanent records? Yeah, that's garbage.
And he looks at it. He's just like,
Shakespeare.
That's it. The book he's holding. That's what he's reading at the time.
Yeah.
Is of course Shakespeare, because he is the only person in the history of high school that's ever like just independently read Shakespeare on their own.
And they're teaching it down the hall, but he won't go to that class.
No, because that teacher doesn't get it.
Yeah. You, thanks, but no thanks.
No, she's going to condescend to me.
Oh, Romeo and Juliet, hey, you ever read Twelfth Night, bitch? And just walks right out.
And the other thing, too, when he breaks up that robbery, this 45-year-old man's really upset about it. It turns out this 45-year-old man is a student at this high school.
Well, his enrollment status is always kind of a little tricky because, like, they see he's stewing outside of the high school. They're, like, this is, by the way, a bad school. This is our, by the way, we get the titular song Tough Turf. Yeah. And we're riding around looking at everybody in their beatboxes. Everyone's got switchblades. It's kind of like Double Dragon, the movie. Like what I imagine the game Double Dragon movie would be like. Like there's an adobo there with a big pipe just walking around down the hallway.
I hate to burst your bubble, but that's not it. There's a lot of mutants in the Double Dragon movie.
Yeah,
yeah, a whole lot of mutants.
And Robert Patrick. Well, that's what the Double Dragon movie should have been. Just some fucking people mix it up. Remember that girl gets punched in the gut in the beginning of that Double Dragon video game.
Yes, what? She certainly does.
Well, this school just like it reminded me of like if Disney tried to make a series out of Dangerous Minds, because they're all like wearing like the tough. And this is actually a problem I have with this movie is that they're all like wearing like alternative like subculture clothing and wardrobe.
Yeah,
like,
they're all dressed very alternative.
Yeah, and. They're all just kind of like getting along, snapping to all these songs. Everybody's getting along, it seems, except for James Spader and this 45-year-old.
Everyone else in this high school moves with the flow of a jet or a shark. They are bouncing off lockers, smoothly flying down the hallway. It's beautiful.
It's very much a musical. This is a musical. Yeah. This is how you reveal the high school in a musical.
Right, and then you get – this is the third kind of – you know, what this movie is – it's kind of a musical combined with a soundtrack film.
Yeah.
We've got full live performances coming up that we're going to talk about. And then, yeah, there is choreographed dancing. There's all these people like walking through the campus with they've got like boom boxes, but they're dance walking with these boom boxes, like making a big deal about walking to class.
And I mean, this 45-year-old gangster guy.
Nick is his name.
And he's outside. And you talk about his enrollment. It's the shittiest joke in the world where he's like, he sees Spader. And when Spader broke up the fight, one of his underlings had like Zorro marked him with a wire.
Yeah, he broke the antenna off a car and was like sword playing with it.
That's what this movie is, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. And he whips Spader on the back. Because Spader, of course, is wearing a leather jacket, but there's like
something pinned to
it. It's like an American flag patch pin, and he whips it good, you know. So that's how he recognizes him.
That's how the 45-year-old Nick recognizes him.
45.
he's getting up there.
Well, I feel this is kind of like the Belushi movie, The Principal, right?
It
like
is. It's the same school.
That drug lord in that movie is very much probably not actually enrolled in that school. But, you know, this is before like how schools are now. So, like, you could kind of just hang out at a school and no one's going to give you too much trouble.
I mean, he's not enrolled in AARP, but he's considering it. He's starting to, like, look around.
They have discounts at all sorts of coffee shops.
But anyway, he's out front and like he sees Spader and he sees Spader going into the school and he's like, oh, we're going to school today. And they're all like, what?
That's a reason to go to school.
It's a very much it's a boss situation. He's the boss and he's got a bunch of little underlings and he's got this girlfriend that he's always like grabbing a little too hard.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we can address it right here. This dude is one of those stupid motherfuckers that's like, she is my property. Mm-hmm. He owns this chick in this movie, and it's really shitty.
And it's kind of unsettling because he's also one of those guys who thinks like he can still be like kind of a chummy guy while also having that philosophy.
So, you know, we go to school. We meet Robert Downey Jr., who is before his face changes. Robert Downey Jr.'s, like, 1980s face. He's kind of got – it's the same thing – that happened to Tom Cruise. They both got their teeth fixed and got totally different faces.
Yeah, his face goes through puberty in like the early 90s.
Like his initial teeth, he looks like one of, remember in Goof Troop how that kid looked?
Max?
Max.
Goofy's son?
Yeah, he kind of looks a little bit like Max. And then he just turned into like you know, Robert Downey Jr. eventually.
Well, he also he lost some weight, I think.
Yeah,
he got
he's
into
still
kind of
like
bit, yeah.
pudgy kid. By the way, how did Goofy have sole custody of that kid? Is his wife dead in that show?
Well, you missed the movie, the I Am Sam thing that happened before, because that. Goofy is mentally challenged and wants to take care of his son.
I mean, that's what that whole goof troop the movie is, where he's like, we're going on vacation.
Yeah, but
I mean, like, yuck.
But you don't see Michelle Pfeiffer busting on the door every once in a while and be like, how's everything going in here?
I mean, I think Goofy's a widower.
Are you getting your three squares a day?
Well, no.
Is Dad putting you to bed at night?
Maybe it was.
How's
some,
that going?
Maybe it was some girl he met in the Institute.
It could be the Institute. Either way, all they listen to is Beatles covers. Fuck that I Am Sam movie, by the way. For classic movie gangster, you know, methodology, he steals his bike.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real badass thing to do. And this is our first, like, that's the thing. I feel like there's, like, six standoffs in this movie that, like, almost boil over with between Spader and this bad guy.
Well, that's the one we missed in the genre chalk-up is that we forgot Westerns.
Yeah, this. I mean, it is like the showdown at the OK Corral.
But it's kind of like Karate Kid, but the stakes are way up there for no reason. Because it's not like, oh, man, they're just going to kick his ass. It's like... And then some. There's that just like, and then he's going to be in a fucking wheelchair.
Well, that's what's really weird about this movie is the stakes are kind of high enough only because they kind of don't care if they kill him.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there is always a possibility of James Spader meeting his maker in this movie. And these dudes, it's not like a, oh, yeah, kick his ass. It's like, yeah, cut his throat.
well, because most of
it's a huge difference.
There's a really huge difference.
Especially for a high school film.
Well, because they start off and it's like, and that hold-up scene, like, I don't know, the Cobra Kai, they're just beating up like little kids around the neighborhood. They're not like trying to steal anything.
Yeah.
These guys have knives and they're like, they have plans to rob people.
Well, the other thing is, I feel like we meet this gang at a time in its like lifespan where the gang, it's the top of the pops for these guys. Mm. No one is coming up against them. There's no opposing gang. And everyone else in the school seems very cool to just let whatever happen.
Because well, they're not the Jets, the Sharks, they're the Knives. Everybody's got a blade in this fucking school.
But no one else stands up to them. That's why like when James Spader goes, what they do is they have a big circle of cars and whatnot, and they take his bike and they put it in the middle of it, and they're like, oh, you want your bike back? And he starts walking towards them, and RDJ's like, what are you doing right now? And everyone in the school is like, holy fuck, he's going to get his bike back. Like, by this time, this gang is so powerful, everyone has learned to just let it happen. Like, if they're going to beat the shit out of somebody, he can't be helped.
He walks past the memorial plaque of the last kid that tried to get his bike back.
And even that is vandalized, and no one said shit about it.
Somebody just spray-painted tough on it.
And so, you know, he gets this bike and whatever, and they're like, like this chick spray paints him in the face.
Yeah.
It's really fucked up. And they kind of just make fun of him for a little bit. And then they're all like, all right, pussy, you got your bike back, I guess, whatever. And then here's this dude with this fucking muscle car that's like, oh, wait. He actually had the audacity to get his bike? Well, I'm up. I got to run him down.
Well, that's a killable offense.
It's like old Detroit, man. They'll fucking kill you for watching TV in the street.
I mean, it's really like, and I mean, this guy is like Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator. He's just like pulling the audience as he's going along.
Oh, yeah. He's like, should I give him his bike back? And they're all like really terrified to say anything. And he totally does a like, I can't hear you. And he's like doing thumbs up, thumbs down.
Somebody in the audience, it was another off-screen thing that I was like, what are you talking about? Is some girl is just like, Oh, you got out of the way of the car, huh? Pussy.
Yeah, he jumps out of the way. He kind of plays chicken with the car. He stares it down. And Robert Downey Jr. has to say, oh, man, he's got a death wish. Like, just to telegraph it a little bit more.
So he, like, you know, kind of does a little Toro Toro with the car and sidesteps out of the way. The car hits this bike. And again, I hate when this happens in movies. Like, a car hits something, and whatever it hits goes straight up in the air. Yeah. 30 feet. You see, it like there's impact, and then it cuts to a shot of the sky, and this bike like slowly flies through the frame. That's not how that happens.
And there's always kind of a $6 million man sound when it happens.
So he goes home, and his mom's like, oh, you fucking broke your bike. And he's just giving her the James. Like, being James Spader's teenage mother, that's a tough one.
And, like,
that's a tough pill to swallow.
And then the dad comes in. The dad, who is the bartender from Back to the Future 3, pretty great character actor.
To make some wake-up juice.
Yeah. This guy who has a stupid haircut through this whole movie. And I don't know how these filmmakers let this pass, because this guy looks like, it's like Jeff Daniels' hair in Dumb and Dumber. Like, it's just a mess. And, you know, he's supposed to be this former, like, real estate mogul from Connecticut. Now he's a cab driver that works nights. So the dad comes in because he's, you know, Spader gets into it with this mother. And he's like, you know, can you fix your bike, son? And classic Spader, he's just like, oh, yeah, Dad, I'll get on it right after I learn how to walk on water. And you're like, oh, man, teenagers.
I mean, that was like the fifth time he's heard one of those today.
Exactly.
That's 110%. His life. That's, and I mean, that's probably why he doesn't even give a shit what his hair looks like at this point. He's got this shit-ass kid.
He can't wait to get in that fucking taxi cab.
That's his escape.
What's weird in this the family dynamic here is, you know, because the dad lost the business and they moved across country and they live in this small L.A. house now and whatnot. But there's also this older brother who is kind of still rich and waspy. I don't get what's going on here.
Well, he's got the good job, but apparently he moved out west with everybody else.
I don't know how that happened, but also, fine, you have this great job. How about supporting your family a little bit? They're living in a real slum.
They are.
And he comes in with a sweater tied around his neck, like, let's make this quick. Muffy's waiting in the car. And you're like, wait a second. Your priorities are out of order.
Well, that's the fourth part of this movie. It's a right side of the tracks, wrong side of the tracks movie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's your Pretty in Pink plot.
Mm-hmm.
Except the guy. This is what's weird, though, because he's a transplant from the right side of the tracks, yeah. Right? Like, so he is put on the wrong side of the tracks and falls in love with a girl who is born and bred wrong side of the tracks.
She's at the end of the wrong side of the tracks.
I think she lives at a train station.
She lives above a fucking liquor store.
Yeah, that is the end of the line.
If that liquor store sold guns, it would be that much worse. But that's it.
Guns, liquor, lottery tickets, and they'll cash a check for you.
And bulletproof glass everywhere.
And the guy who owns the building hates it because every 6 months, the person who's living there kills themselves. And he's got to clean it out.
Yeah, he really gets put out by that suicide.
Poor old Bill.
It's a lot of like, he's making him pay in advance.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, because I can't rent it a month after.
You know how long it takes to clean off those kinds of stains?
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, he might be happy because he gets to keep every security deposit.
So now, you know, James Spader wants to cut loose. So Robert Downey Jr. is like, hey, I'm playing this band that you should come see me because we're kind of friends now.
Man.
And look the fuck out for this. A couple of numbers that are coming up.
I'm not having a hard time making fun of this movie because it's a bad, stupid movie, but this is a great fucking movie, okay? They go to this warehouse where this band featuring a shirtless RDJ with a Chippendales bow tie on as the drummer. Look out. This shit is great.
And the lead singer of this band is Jim Carroll, an accomplished musician, but also the guy that lived the Basketball Diaries.
Lived to tell about it.
And he is heroined up and playing this music.
I feel like this may have been one of those crossroads sets for RDJ.
Yeah.
Like, they went to film this. They spent a week filming this warehouse concert, and he was hanging out with Jim Carroll, possibly. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, I'm sure it was a thing. Like, oh, so you hung out with Andy Warhol, huh? Oh, okay. Yeah, this band's pretty good. Okay.
And, you know, they play a full song, and everybody's dancing along. The choreography is fabulous. Like, you know, it's not like Step Up Revolution kind of choreography.
Oh, nobody's popping and locking, but, I mean, there's...
No, but the funny thing is about the choreography is, like, they paid... When you get choreography, you can't just have extras. You have to have dancers. But there's also extras, so you'll see some hapless fat guys just trying to keep up a little bit.
There is a lot of hapless fat guys. And actually, the bad guy, this 45-year-old high school student, is one of the worst dancers of all time, but he is dancing his heart out. Well, which is weird because, okay, you're the villain of this movie, right? You are at this concert, fine. But you are up in the balcony. People are bringing you drinks. Mm-hmm. You're kind of like angrily watching the band. I mean, you like them, but your arms are folded. You know what I mean? And he is just down there on the floor like, ah, ha, ha, like really cutting loose.
Well, he's got him and his underlings. He's just like calling out to Jim Carroll in the middle of the set.
Oh, yeah, like their best buddy.
Yeah, JC.
And it's Jim Carroll, yeah, as himself, which... compounds the weirdness with all of this.
I mean, he's used to warehouses, but...
So Spader comes into this place after stealing a Porsche to get there because his bike's all fucked up. And
That's how he rolls, by the way.
Yeah. His, by the way, $500 bicycle. Show me the mountain bike capabilities of this little fucking dinky thing he's rolling around in.
It's got to be at least a 10-speed. So he gets to this club and he's kind of dancing around. It's also a weird situation. It's I mean, you know, it's a poorly made movie, but like all the lights are on. It's not like you're at a club, the lights are off and it's all stage lights. It's just full ceiling, you know, industrial fluorescent lights or whatever. So everything's clearly visible. So he's spotted immediately by these hoods.
And then, you know, he takes the break and like James Spader has a scene with Jim Carroll. Jim Carroll's like, I don't know, you should probably talk to her. And he's like, wait, what are you saying? I got to play another song, man. Talk to you later.
Well, it's...
Hey, you got to go have a cigarette? No, I got to play music. I'll talk to you later.
This is where you get kind of a little bit of an insight into James Spader's life, because Jim Carroll somehow manages to ask him, like, what did you do? What? And he's like, oh, I'm from Connecticut. And he goes to RDJ and he's like, Connecticut? Is this guy for real? And it's like, yep, that's a state.
Wait, Connecticut, James Spader, you told me you're from Ohio. No, we're doing this scene now. Okay, I gotta go.
And Spader, he says, you know, what was there to do in Ohio? And, you know, this is where, you know, we learn how this dude lived. He's like, oh, I worked at a yacht club on the weekends. And he's like,
that's weird. All right, break's over.
I gotta go itch my brain off it, but.
And then they just start playing another song. And this is where Spader spots this chick at the place and very forcefully is like, we're dancing.
Yeah, it's kind of rape dancing.
It's rancing.
It's not so much that she doesn't want to dance with James Spader.
Yeah.
It's that she knows that fucking Roscoe up in the balcony, you know, after he cashes the Social Security check, is going to notice that James Spader's messing with her and is going to get pissed off about it.
And he sends his goons down, but they can't get through the crowd of choreographed dancing. They're doing, like, different lines and getting in and out.
It's like that final scene in Grease, Ram-a-lam-a-lam-a, ding-a-ding-da-bow. And they're just all like crossing the floor. It's crisscross mania.
And they're trying to get somewhere. Like, get out of here. Move it.
Well, that's what's great. These hoods are trying to get to them and, like, you know, fuck up James Spader. But you can see all the dancers are getting really indignant. Like, hey, you're messing it up.
We've been practicing this for months. And, I mean, they get broken up. And James Spader gets the shit kicked out of him outside. Second time in like 5 minutes.
This guy does not know how to back down.
And they're like, all right, well, now we're going to steal your car, which, of course, is stolen, and they get arrested. Robert Downey's like, oh, sorry, they stole your car. And James Spader's like, I don't even own a car.
I don't own a car, man. That's it. And then that dude gets pulled over. And he goes to jail for like 12 hours. Like, I guess he makes bail. You don't really see it. It's just like the next day at school and this dude's hanging out again.
Oh, I mean, the editing in this movie is fucking atrocious. You don't know what's going on from scene to scene.
But the interesting thing about it is it's incompetently edited, but it's also got a really flashy editor. So, like, the parts where it should be, like, basic editing, like, and then this character would logically be here, so we have to show this happening, so we'll cut here, put this here. Like, normal putting together a movie is very incompetent, but, like, the transitions are all really flashy, and there's a lot of, like, fast music video cutting at parts.
Oh, by the way, every sequence we just talked about takes at least 15 minutes. Like, nothing happens that we just stay in these moments forever.
And there are moments you don't need to stay in. Like, sometimes, yeah, it's very justified to be like, all right, just hold it there for a second. Yep, just stay, do what you're doing, just keep it. Okay, that's great. There's literally a scene where a dude kicks them out of a restaurant, and we just hold on this snooty maitre d' who's just like, you did it, Sandoval.
Well, he didn't call cut yet, so I guess I'll still keep acting.
I'll smile, and now I'm going to turn around this way. Oh, maybe I'll fold my arms.
What else? I can check my watch.
Maybe I'll just look at my shoes for a little bit. Oh, those are nice shoes.
So Spader uses the time in which this 45-year-old high school student is in the clink to pick up this chick and, you know, kind of try to start something real.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. steals Nick's car for some reason. They're driving around in it. They pick up the girlfriend. She sticks in her neck. He's like, all right, let's go to this country club. It's going to be hilarious.
And we're freaking out all the wasps.
Mm-hmm. Because he's like, I used to be one of them, man, and I hate their fucking guts. Like, they don't know what life is. Like,
and also, that's kind of kidnapping.
Again, she doesn't want to be in this car. She's like, let me go, let me go. And he's like, baby.
Well, it's her friend who's like, oh, well, I want to go because Robert Downey Jr.'s in the car. And, like, she gets in the backseat with RDJ, and they start making out, like, right away. And then she's sitting in the front seat like, harumph. And again, like, and this is what I was thinking of, by the way. We're talking about, like, soundtrack movies. It's like they're doing what Easy Rider does, right? Yeah. It's like, we're just going to drive around and play a song and we're looking at shit. But this is not the movie. This is not the time or the place for this to be happening. And they drive all through the L.A. freeway and a song plays. The entire goddamn song.
Because it's not America. It's like, it's not Americana scenery and like landscapes and shit like that. It's a fucking McDonald's. It's Roy's Burgers.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
Sammy's Laundromat.
It's ugly L.A.
Ironically enough, during the filming of this movie, James Spader and Robert Downey Jr. did acid with Jim Carroll in a graveyard. Just because. What, are you going to show up to the set or something? That sounds boring, man.
My mother.
Has your soul ever condescended to you, man?
Yeah, so they're driving around. And then, he says, let's go to this country club. I'll show you what it's like on the other side. / it's going to be the biggest ironic whoop-de-doo you've ever seen. Man, go in places because of ironic reasons. Oh, isn't it great? And here we go. We walk right into this place, and he's like, I used to be one of these people. Just do as I say. She says to the one chick, just use the word fabulous a lot. They'll think you're just back from Europe. Oh, my God.
Well, it's just, it's like Reagan's America, man. Let's just fucking thumb our noses at it. That's what you want,
and
right,
it's all,
Republicans?
Yep. And let's not, it's just all tennis. That's all it is, because he's pointing a tennis racket at everybody. He's like, oh, this is what they do.
And again, I mean, we're coming up to my favorite part of the movie.
Oh, man.
But,
and you know, all right.
But this takes forever because
so excited.
We have to see all four of these characters, two of which kind of aren't characters, Robert Downey Jr. and his quote-unquote love interest.
Let's call her Maud.
Maud there. I mean, she'd almost be dead meat, but she doesn't get fucking killed in this movie.
Yeah, it's just left out in the sun meat.
So, but all of them have these, like, hilarious interactions with all these wasps. They're all, like, obviously improvising their lines, and it's amazing.
And it was really tough for director Fritz Kirsch, to trim the fat. So he just kind of left it all on the steak. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I kind of feel like this is. I feel like it all came like Pretty in Pink, this, Some Kind of Wonderful. It all came from the same cow. And they got the slab of meat down, and like they're like, lean cut here, here's Some Kind of Wonderful. Lean cut here, here's this fucking Breakfast Club, and here's this. And like, and here's all the fat. We'll call it Tough Turf, I guess.
Which, ironically, is, I think, what it would be called on the menu if it was a steak that was just predominantly fat parts.
And it's $4.
Wow, what a deal, says obese people everywhere.
Howard the Homeless Man's favorite meal.
So here we are. There's a band playing like Twist and Shout that's really terrible, and it's like, oh man, how ironic. Mm-hmm. And then they go off, and James Spader, this woman still isn't liking James Spader, and he's like, you know what, I got this. He grabs her, brings her on stage, and he's like, all right, those fine people have left, now we're gonna entertain you. And he starts singing her a song.
And you know, man, here's the whole fucking thing.
I feel the thunder. I feel the pain. I know the struggles you keep, the nights in the rain. I feel your face. I hear your eyes. I know the
it's
nights
working.
That you cry, but still, we survive. I walk the night. I walk the night.
Well, darling, do you care to dance?
Fighting the darkness that breaks our hearts, we hold each other tight.
Back to We Hate Movies. You're welcome. I mean, it doesn't really do it that much justice because the faces Spader is making at this microphone, man. I mean, he is fake painting to hit these notes.
He is holding in the world's largest piss during this song. He's just like, he's like itching his gums with his teeth. He's like, just like, ugh.
And this woman is just like falling in love with him all over.
It's a scene from the Fabulous Baker Boys.
And I mean, that did it. That
was the one.
That goddamn song cracked her. And she's in. She is on board.
By the way, so what are we supposed to believe about this character? Is this like his move? Did he improvise this song? Like,
that's the thing. You don't see him play an instrument ever again. He's singing a little, you know, he's got the bebopalula going on at the beginning, so I mean, maybe he's talented, but again, he's just so dark and introspective, you don't know what talents are going to pop out of that black hole.
No, I mean, he seems like a philosophy guy. He's just in his room reading all these books. He apparently knows how to shoot a dart gun because that's how he kills insects.
But, yeah, that's another dark turn he has.
Yeah, but he could hear her eyes and feel her face and
smell her fucking voice. You know,
it's just amazing. And it's
taste her air.
Like, that's when I was watching this movie. I was like, oh, wait, what is this movie? Like, you know, it's like when your mom comes into a movie. What are you watching? But I was watching it the whole time.
I don't know, Ma. Give me a few more minutes.
So, like, my left brain is like, what are you watching? And my right brain's like, I don't know. Give me a few minutes because I didn't know.
This song just came on, Ma. Also, it's in this scene, during all these, like, riffs and whatnot, Maud's talking to a couple of these, like, you know, waspy chicks and whatever. They're at the buffet. And she starts talking about, like, dick size and stuff like that. And they keep cutting back to her. And it's, like, different penis talk and this, that, and the other thing. And she's, like, more experienced than a couple of these ladies, we'll put it that way. And they, you know, they're all kind of like agreeing with Maud, like, because they don't want to be left in Maud's sexual dust, you know. And at one point it just cuts, like, you got Robert Downey Jr. like talking up some old lady with a fake accent, and James Spader's like talking shit about some food recipe and playing with a lobster, and then it cuts back to this chick and she's just like, you guys swallow, right? And they're all like, uh-huh, uh-huh. Yep, we sure do, yep. Mm-mm. You're like, I really wish Spader was singing right now.
Well, because all the other ones make sense, and it's the friend. It's the one who's making out with RDJ who's doing this.
We're calling her Maud.
Oh, that's Maud?
That's
okay.
Maud.
Okay. Maud.
Keep up.
It's Get your head out of your ass.
It's your own goddamn show, Chris. Keep up.
So Maud.
Yes.
She starts talking, and this is another one of those things where it happens all the time. You're just like, what the fuck are you doing? She just starts talking about how, like, oh, her ex-boyfriend was an Adonis. He was lovely. He was beautiful. But, I mean, his cock was the size of a cocktail weenie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The pigs in the blanket joke. Have fun. Fine.
Oh, good Lord. So they get kicked out of this place. After this piano number, that's when the Snooty Mater D comes up. And he's like, you are not, nor have you ever been, members of this all-white organization. There's the door.
And here comes the star of the movie, man.
We have a nice little walking scene of like, oh, I love you. Yeah, I think we're falling in love. And they're like, hey, you want to go see another musical act? Yeah, sure. It's been 2.5 minutes.
And this is where we meet Jack Mack and the Heart Attacks. Man, oh, man. If you want, what are you calling this kind of music?
Because the whole rest of the movie, it's all like new wave, like, you know, like, sounds like Carsy sometimes and other things. And
yeah,
blah,
a lot
blah,
of
blah.
Synth.
A lot of synth. And then all of a sudden, it's like just Fat Guy John Candy music. You know what I mean? Like, he's at the resort trying to get his girlfriend back, and we're all kind of dancing together.
Oh, absolutely. You heard this music in Summer Rental, probably.
And it's very specifically John Candy, because, I mean, if it was just Fat Guy music, because Rodney Dangerfield's fucking dancing to Oingo Boingo and Back to School.
He's got Oingo Boingo. He was dancing to Journey and Caddyshack. Like, yeah. Rodney was up on the popular music.
But, I mean, it's all like, you know, dirty Chicago blues from fucking John Candy.
I mean, these dudes are like an F-list blues brothers.
Because it's Jack Mack, who's your big fat guy with a beard. And he's got, you know, he's got a tight shirt on. And then he's got this backing band. Everybody looks like Poindexter from Revenge of the Nerds. With very, they all look like the third guy in ZZ Top in various ways. Just a lot of blonde mustaches.
Which is amazing. Oh, and sunglasses everywhere. But what's amazing is that's what they all look like. But Jack Mack looks like that racist, are you ready for some football guy?
He does.
If you put a cowboy hat and aviator sunglasses on that guy, he could be on fucking ABC Monday Night Football.
Oh, Jack Mack's ready for some football.
Jack Mack is ready for some football. The process of casting Jack Mack of the Heart Attacks.
I just imagine he gets a phone call and he's like, uh-huh. Oh, you want my band, huh? You like our tape? That's fantastic. Thanks so much. And you pan back and he's just in an apartment without any furniture whatsoever.
He slowly puts the phone down and you're just like tied in on his face.
And then up comes a crack pipe and he just lights it. And then as he exhales, he just goes, thank you, Jesus.
Another week. I got another week in L.A.
Anything to keep me in L.A. I love the City of Angels. Did you know it's called the City of Angels? Oh, yeah.
Jack Black's back. Jack Black's back. Back.
And these dudes rock out.
And again, it's a full fucking number. We're watching the saxophone guy go back and forth. Jack Mack is fucking tearing it.
Kim Richards, who plays this Frankie, the love interest there, Ms. Real Housewife, she's like dancing on tabletops and like patting dudes on the top of the head like she's playing a bongo set. Like, it's put together.
I mean, when they do get together, when her, spoiler alert, they are definitely the couple who likes to watch each other. It's kind of like Mimi Rogers and what's his name in The Rapture.
Oh, yeah, her European friend, curious European friend.
Yeah, because he's just like, he's the guy that goes to the dance clubs and, no, I want to watch you dance. And he just kind of stays back. But it's not like I'm afraid of dancing. It's more like, I kind of like the idea of watching you dance with other people.
Oh, yeah. No, there's just a couple of dudes and maybe some ladies, and they're just taking you places.
So we're having this great, I mean, literally, it's a great fucking time because Mack brings it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Any night with Jack Mack is a night to remember.
Jack Mack brings bass.
You wake up with some queso cheese on your shirt.
Some queso cheese.
There's some pot resin in your fingernails, and you're like, all right, I guess so, Jack Mack.
And you're kind of hungover, and you're really dehydrated, and you're like, what's that? Oh, warm Mountain Dew? Okay.
And you look at your wallet, the only thing left is your Social Security card, and you're like, Jack!
Social Security card and an empty condom wrapper.
You open the refrigerator door and all's in there is a pig's head.
There's a pickle jar and all the pickles are still in it, but all the pickled juice is gone. Jack Mack's been to your house.
Some reason you keep smelling Tabasco sauce.
It's everywhere.
I showered 3 fucking times. Where is it?
And your sister just doesn't take your phone calls anymore, and you never find out why.
And you're never gonna. So we cut from the greatest night ever, I wish I was there, to this boyfriend just beating the shit out of this woman.
He's throwing her around, you know, because he finds out that she's with Morgan, and he's throwing her around. And then, like, they kind of make up, and they're on the bed, and they're kissing. And he starts to make a move, and she says this.
Look, we don't do it until I say it's okay, remember?
Now, when you say, I don't, you know, you're only allowed to have sex with me when I say it's okay, remember? That's
the R word there is the key word.
That's a history I don't want to hear about.
That says to me, how many times are we going to do this?
It's at least over 3 incidents.
Oh.
Because if you can, like, it happens once, you're like, hey, no. Happens again. You're like, we were over this. We went over this.
Mm-hmm.
Third one, you're like, are you fucking serious with this shit? And then the fourth one, you're like, remember?
Yeah, it's like you've yelled at him 3 times. So maybe the fourth time, if I just try to be like stern but nice, kind of like training a dog.
But he doesn't fucking get it because she lays down on the bed. And I mean, like, again, we just cut from like fucking red shirts. And like, it's like the end of a movie where everything. Da-da-da-da-da. And then you cut, and this woman is just laying on the bed, and he's kissing her, and she's got the most pained. It's the best acting she does in the movie, and I wish she didn't do it. Because it's just like this pained look, and his head's going down, and it's going down, and off camera. And again, we hold.
You hold long enough that you start noticing things you wish you didn't notice, like the bruises on her arms. And the uncomfortable her looking at the ceiling like, if I can just find a point up on the wall, it'll be over. Like, and we can't cut away. It just makes you keep fucking watching this.
When I watched this first time, I was like, we're going to cut to him leaving the room. We're going to cut to him leaving the room. We're going to cut to him leaving the room. Oh, we're cutting back to James Spader?
Yeah.
Right back.
James Spader, like, there's a couple of cuts like this where, like, she's having the worst time anyone's ever had. And James Spader's just hanging out at his house. Like, things are pretty good in my life. You know what, Albert Einstein poster? I think things are going to be all right.
Things were up to a little bit of a rough start when I got to this new school, but we're going to be okay.
I'm just going to go into the locker room now then.
Oh,
so he's in,
man.
He's back at school, and now obviously our favorite AARP member has found out about them, and they're in the locker room, and they're like changing after a game or something. And all of a sudden, you notice everybody else is left.
Yeah, everybody's getting out. Again, because it's like a goddamn Wild West town. Everybody knows that when, you know, a 45-year-old high school bully says, scram, you're just going to back out and you're not going to say a goddamn thing.
Mm-hmm. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
And it's really horrible because Spader is still on cloud nine, uh-huh. right? Because they're in that locker room and the radio is on and it's playing some tune. And Spader's like, oh, yeah, man. Oh, this is a classic tune. Turn it up. And this one guy's like, just like backs away. And he's like, that's weird. Someone turn up that radio.
Hey, we're all having a good time.
Are
right?
we starting the next musical number? What's going on here?
Man, let me tell you something. If I'm in a locker room, right, and there's a bunch of dudes around and we're all having a great time, and then I just look and everybody's gone but me really fast, I'm getting the fuck out of there.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't care what state of dress I'm in. I am getting out of Dodge, man, because
I'm getting out the window, too. I'm not going the stairs.
No. And because what's going to happen? Dudes that have car keys and padlocks in socks are going to sneak up behind you and start beating you Private Pile style.
It is a brutal beating.
The sound effects here are really great. Like the thuds of these fucking keys and locks
and
on his body.
They were definitely using something because you can see those little imprints on his back when it's happening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, again, look, the makeup's really good at this point. Like, they just put dents on his back and he's just like, oh, God, no!
And that's how much it shows you that they rule this school. They are not afraid about bruises, right? That's why in Full Metal Jacket, they use soap on Private Pile because it does not bruise. You put soap in a sock, you can go hog wild on a motherfucker. He ain't going to have a scratch on him. They don't care that Spader looks like that because they run this town. Well, that principal's powerless.
Yeah, that bearded principal has nothing to do with this.
And I mean, like, you look at the other 80s movie. This is, again, why this wasn't on TBS. This scene, the scene that came before it, like, that's why it didn't go into your John Hughes rotation and is part of the lexicon, because it's just so fucking weird.
Yeah, it just takes these, and it's also weird, too, because, like, Spader's got his shirt off, but he's got a pair of jeans on, mm-hmm. and he tries to, you know, get away, and they whack him, and he goes down on that first one, and he's, like, on a bench, bent over this bench, and he's trying to pull himself up, and they grab him by the jeans and tug on them dungarees, baby, and, like, his ass kind of hangs out, and I was like, where is this going?
Yeah. Especially after the last scene.
I didn't fucking sign on for this shit.
I mean, I just watched Sleepers. I don't need this at two.
And they beat him fucking mercilessly. And the guy comes up to him quietly. He's like, and that's why you don't mess with my girlfriend. You know what I say? Message received loud and clear.
Oh, yeah. It is not worth it.
No, it's fair. You want me to break up with her right in front of you, huh? Got it. Done.
I will tell Kim Richards to her face that I never want to see her again.
Oh, you want me to blame it all on her? Perfect. I got that, too.
Money? Got money? Anything? Like, this is when you extricate yourself from the situation. I know we all had a lovely musical number together,
yeah.
But let's just back it up a bit.
Yeah, exactly. He's reaching in his wallet. He's like, all right, I spent last night with Jack Mack. I don't really have much. But, you know, take my social security card.
Jack Mack spends big.
Yeah, where's Jack Mack to save?
I got your buddy. Comes in with a 2x4.
Like Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
He looks like Jim Duggan.
Yeah, he does look exactly like Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
This movie was edited by a dude named Mark Grossman. And I just find it interesting because we're talking about the weird sex stuff in this movie. This dude has cut a lot of, hilariously, Project Runway episodes recently. But prior to that, He edited a whole mess of Red Shoe Diaries. A whole lot of Red Shoe. Like a full season of Red Shoe Diaries.
He was their regular.
Yeah, there wasn't like a series director or writer on Red Shoe Diaries, but this guy cut
the series editor Grossman.
He had an office. He's the only one with an office.
It's the only one with his name on a door.
And he makes sure, you know, on his plaque on his door, it makes sure it says Red Shoe Diaries.
Yes. So there is a great scene. He comes, Spader comes home, and he's all beat up and shit. And this shitty mother, and she's a shitty mother.
It's
she's
a bad
very
mom.
Shitty to James Spader in the sense that it's a lot of like, well, you'll never be your older brother kind of stuff, which, you know, a kid like that does not need to hear. He's difficult enough as it is with how deep he is and everything.
The only thing you could do is keep saying, I accept you, I accept you, I accept you, no
110%.
Matter what.
110%.
Keep on buying him those Barnes & Noble gift cards every time you can. And
you
just
get
him
whatever you want, honey.
Oh, you want a library card? Great, honey.
And then every so often you just ask him, hey, what you reading? And he says something really long and obscure like, hey, interesting, and move on.
I heard that a half an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, bye. So he's in his room, and the mother says to the father, like, listen, he's shitting around in there. I don't know what's going on. You want to try to talk to this kid or what? So the dad walks in, and I mean, there he is with the worst haircut the world's ever seen. And he tries to lay down some fatherly advice, and he's asking, you know, he sees all the bruises and everything, and he's like, you know, what are you into? You know, whatever it is, can you handle it? You know, do you know what you're doing? All this stuff starts getting into life and everything, right? And this line that this dude says is really fantastic. And it's, and I've read some things about the movie here and there, and including Roger Ebert's review. They all quote this fucking thing, and it's this.
Life isn't a problem to be solved. It's a mystery to be lived.
What? What? Thanks, Dad, what? I'm going to go find some answers in one of my philosophy books, okay? Because that makes no fucking sense. He's basically saying, like, nah, I can't help you.
Yeah, this dad kind of will be wishing that he could have helped him out in about 10 minutes.
Well, because I think he felt, I think that father, like, for a while now has been trying to, like, he gets little ideas of what to tell him, like advice to give him in his head. And he's like, how is he going to listen to me? I'll say it's quoted from Albert Einstein or something. And so he's been trying to do that for years. But now he's so old. He's, you know, he's read so much that he can call him out on every single one of them.
He didn't say that, Dad.
No, that's in a book I saw.
It's a good one. Stephen King. Nice try, Dad.
Yeah, Faulkner said, always keep your head up.
When barn burning, always keep your head up.
Yeah, he edits those down.
So, again, as opposed to staying as far a fuck away, I mean, look, it's high school, man. You'll find somebody else. It's totally fine.
I saw that opening dance number at that school. It is a babalicious student body.
Just move on. But no, he's got to keep... It's the death wish, man, in quotation marks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's honestly because he just likes fucking with people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm sure he's got feelings for Frankie, but he kind of just likes fucking with this dude all the more. Well, you know what I mean?
That's why he's an unsettling character, because he's so close to a sociopath.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're just taking a little right turn into sociopath.
We cut to her. She's trying on a bunch of clothes. And James Spader, because he's got no fucking common sense, is like, hey, you want to come to my family's house for dinner tomorrow? And she's like, yeah, sounds great. You're fucking you're in crutches.
And also, it's kind of weird. It's the first instance, technically, because we're talking 85 right here. And I think I have my years correct. We have a boombox outside of a broad's window.
Yeah.
Because she's trying on these clothes, and she's saying all the rich people lines all over again and kind of pretending that she doesn't live above a liquor store. You know.
I mean, and, that's her fucking life, man.
No, I know. But then so she starts hearing this rock and roll out the window, and she's like, people get killed for less outside this liquor store. And she walks out. There's Spader with this little radio, and she's like, turn that shit off. What are you doing? And again, we walk the night.
Get out of here, Spader.
There are several instances where this does feel like West Side Story. Like, we're talking about the Jets and the Sharks, yeah. But also that dance scene is very much like the school dance towards the beginning of West Side Story. And now this scene where he climbs the fire escape and goes up to her window and everything and sneaks in, and they're in the bedroom. And then the fucking boyfriend is on the other side of the door, and he does not have patience for locked doors.
So, you know, she finally says yes. He runs away. And Nick comes in, and he's got a bottle of champagne. You're like, well, this can't be good. And
this is my weapon for tonight.
Oh, God. Yeah. And your father's like, congratulations, you're getting married. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me, old man?
I had to pause Netflix. I got up, did a lap around the living room, cleared my head, and then sat back down. Because what are you doing? What on earth? I mean, you know, and I get it, too. I mean, homeboy's 45 years old. He's no spring chicken. He's got to lay something down, you know, before he's got one foot in the grave. But she's like 17 years old. And this dad comes in like, I'm finally marrying off my daughter. Like, she's some 30-year-old spinster.
I know.
Well, it's been long enough. This old man that owns this liquor store thinks he's living in 1650. Like, you old bitch. You old 17-year-old sea hag bitch.
Yeah. Your value's dropping by the day. I'm not going to even get a mule cart for you.
What a shitty dowry you'll give me.
God damn it.
I stole your dowry joke, didn't I?
Let's go for a dowry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was also going to make a Downton Abbey joke.
Jack back in the dowries.
Yeah, I'll buy your daughter.
All right, cool. No, kind of.
So he's got this champagne.
Yeah, he does. And this guy's like, oh, I'm coming in a whole bunch of money, which doesn't make any sense.
And this, I mean, yeah, he's acting like he's marrying his daughter off to fucking George Clooney. He's like, oh, man, what a catch, right? And meanwhile, this dude is chugging this champagne out of the bottle like, oh, this is great.
He's got a fucking court date coming up. Like, a lot of shit. He's not wearing a shirt, by the way. I apologize. He's just wearing a vest.
A leather vest and a cross around his neck.
He's dressed like a warrior. Like, one of the fucking warriors.
Or one of fucking Al Pacino's friendlier people in Cruising.
Yeah, he's the dude that's got the courtesy to put Vaseline all the way up his forearm.
Woo!
Cruising, directed by William Friedkin.
So
she's not too happy about this.
No, she's not about this marriage.
What shitty news.
And I mean, like, again, she's like, well, I have no choice. Better hug him. And then we then we cut, and then we're, you know, there's a thing at school, and he's like, wait, you're fucking getting married? She's like, I guess. See you at dinner tonight.
Well, that's what's great. He's like, what's this about marriage? Also, are you still coming over for dinner? Because we bought food for four people. My mother's going to be furious. We're not rich anymore.
We like to pretend we are. We're not rich. So she comes over for dinner, and it's, and like, we kind of pretend she's not engaged anymore. And it's like, oh, my God, my girlfriend's coming over, and like, she's from the wrong side of the tracks. But now we're from the wrong side of the tracks, too, but we act like we're not.
Uh-huh, yeah. And it's shitty, too, because the dad is kind of like chastising, you know, the mother, like, could you stop being a piece of shit to him for 8 seconds? He's finally openly excited about something. And she's just like, well, I think he could be putting his time elsewhere, like school or yachting. And you're just like, oh.
So she comes over, we're all having dinner. We're having this abnormally crunchy dinner.
I don't know. We were praising the Foley editing before, but these sound effects, like,
listen to this. I'm sorry, here we go. Listen to this.
No, wait. Yeah, we'll listen to it, but when you listen to this, just try to guess what they're eating. There's the sound, and the answer
If you guessed rocks, you're wrong, because it's chicken nuggets. She's grinding pebbles in her mouth like a caveman.
This hoity-toity meal, by the way.
And it's such bullshit, because, again, it's chicken nuggets, okay? And she's eating these chicken nuggets, and the mother is giving her this death stare. And you're like, what's the problem? It's chicken nuggets. And Spader, like, kind of looks at his fork like, she wants you to use a fork. And I'm like, what the fuck for? It's a chicken. It's clearly a chicken nugget.
I eat this meal with my hands every time I'm at KFC. I don't understand why this is different.
Well, excuse me, Your Majesty. So it goes, but it's going along fairly well. Like, she's really awkward and quiet. She's actually probably one of the best actors in this movie. Well, I mean, like, Spader's really good, but she plays like awkward, I don't know how to be around adults teenager really well.
Oh, Kim Richards.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she's doing that, and like the mother's like, "Oh, have you ever been to the Rose Garden?" It's like, and she's like, "Oh, we'll have to go sometimes. Me, you, and your mother," and everything stops.
Dead.
And she drops like wine on herself. She's like, "Oh my god," and runs. And James Spader's like, "Her mother's fucking dead, mom. Thanks for nothing." And like the mother's like, "How the fuck should I know?" Like, that is not my responsibility.
And technically, all things considered, yeah, you know, she didn't know. But you know what? This lady's been such a massive pile of human garbage through the rest of this movie. No sympathy from Andrew Jupin.
I felt conflicted because, like, yeah, the entire time, she's just been giving him shit for nothing. Like, oh, $500 bicycles. That doesn't have any insurance. Well, no bike. Insurance what? And then finally, she gets it thrown right in her fucking face. And it's for something that she couldn't have had any idea about.
So, you know, Frankie flees the house. You know, she runs off and is immediately picked up by this rapist because he's been fucking hanging outside the house, spying in through the window on their dinner. And this is where he gets really, you know, sociopath, because he's like, "Oh, hey, didn't know you were here. Mm-hmm. Me and the boys were just out for a drive. What are you up to? Come on, get in the car. We'll have some fun tonight." Playing it nice and cool.
Because he's doing, and he's kind of almost playing it right, because he's like, "Oh, those rich people treated you wrong, huh? Want to go drink in a shitty car? All right, yeah, let's go drink. Come on, let's drink. You don't need chicken. You don't need crunchy chicken nuggets. Let's have some wild turkey in my fucking beat-up Camaro."
So they go drinking and driving, and one of their favorite pastimes is harassing people that wait outside her dad's liquor store. And there they pull up, and he's like, "Oh, perfect, there's one. Why don't you go ask him for some change?" They're all change gag, because this is what happened with the guy at the beginning of the bus station. She's like, "He got change for a five."
It's kind of funny because they're like, "Oh, what do you want to do tonight?" He's like, "I want to kick up some dirt." And one of the guys like, "Finally." And that's what I felt too. He's like, "Aren't you guys a gang? You haven't been ganging around for a while. You haven't done any gang shit."
Well, they were in jail for, you know, 20 minutes there.
But isn't the insinuation that he's hunting for Spader's father?
No, yeah, he's driving around all the time. Like, it's like kind of light out. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning at this point.
And he's just like, look, because there's a couple of shots of taxi cabs, and it's like it goes to taxi cab back to Nick, and he's looking.
He's very clearly, you're right, he's very clearly looking in cabs. And by the way, again, the editing in this movie, we just left that guy at his house having crunchy chicken nuggets. There's nothing about the editing in this movie that tells me they drove around for, what, 7 hours and then found this dude working nights as a cab driver? It does not make any sense.
That they cut the scene out where he put, like, a bunch of his crunchy soup into like a Tupperware and brought it with him for the night in his crunchy corn.
So she's like, "Oh, wait, oh, that's Morgan's father." And she's like, "Hey, wait a minute." And she like runs out to warn him, and they're like, and they beat the shit out of this guy. So now, all right, like in a normal high school, you know, revenge movie, bullies, love triangle, Robert Downey Jr. gets the shit kicked out of him, right? It's like a thing where they find Robert Downey Jr., they beat the shit out of him, and then he goes to the hospital like, "Get him for me, man." That makes sense. You don't go after somebody's father.
No. A dude who this guy has never met.
Nope.
You know, they have no history. I mean, I don't even know if he got a good look at him through the living room window when he was spying on their crunchy dinner.
I mean, it's definitely, I mean, he's escalating. This is Capone-type behavior. get their families, get the dogs, get the fucking house they live in.
Burn it to the ground.
And William Zabka from Karate Kid would not go after Delarusso's mother, all right?
No way. She's sacred territory. Yeah.
And they're beating the shit out of this guy's dad, but he's kind of holding his own to the point where he offends them all off, right? And he kicks Nick into a car, and you're like, all right, Dad, you got this, Dad. Uh-oh, what's that Nick's got? Oh, it's a big revolver, huh?
This guy pulls out like a Joker pistol. I mean, it's like 2 feet long.
And you're like, well, how? Where's this going? And he blows them the fuck away.
He shoots this dude twice in the chest. And this guy and his comically terrible haircut go down hard.
And you just, again, this is when you pause the movie and do some laps in your living room. Like, but wait, it was a dance movie, right?
It was a dance movie. He was riding a bike. You know, I'll go in the kitchen. I'll fill up the soda stream. I'll come back in here, change a light bulb or something. Like,
let me check my email. I'm going to check my email again. Okay, all right. Good.
I'm going to call my mother. That's what's going to happen. I'm going to see what she thinks about all this.
Because where could this possibly be going at this point?
Cut to the hospital, and somehow this man lives through 2 in the chest, which, whatever.
Collapsed lung.
This dude takes 2 right in the heart. Like,
he's like 3 feet away, and it's a magnum.
This man should not be allowed to
live. It's ignoring the fact that he's 62 and his hair is 53.
Yeah, okay, like maybe you shoot like an Olympian from that distance with that gun twice where you do. You know, maybe Michael Phelps is coming out of this, okay? This guy, this cab driver.
He's a 2-pack a day, man, if there ever was one.
Absolutely. He picked smoking back up during the ride from Connecticut to Los Angeles. He's eating chicken nuggets every night.
Oh, yeah. So much processed food.
So it's like by the bedside, and it's not even, I'm going to get them, Dad. It's just like, hang in there, buddy. Oh, hey, my girlfriend's here. See you later. And it's like, what the fuck?
And classic We Hate Movies favorite, somebody call the police. There's no police in Los Angeles once again.
Well, I think I solved this one. I think that the wardrobe people, they were like, okay, we got to order what? A dozen cop uniforms. We'll get them here. And then we got the cops coming in. They got, you know, talk to the father, whatever. 3 weeks passes. You know, we're coming up on the scene where the cops have to come into the hospital and talk to the father. And have you seen the hats, the billy clubs, any of the? No. They got. And they check the fucking USPS, and it's fucking somewhere in Bangladesh.
Oh, yes. Something went wrong with the costume. Yeah,
the United States Postal Service sent something to Bangladesh.
It's been 3 weeks, the shuts. The next day, and someone comes in and is like, oh, my God, this is terrible. But I found the order form in the living room. And it's like, oh, I left it there. I never sent it.
These fucking interns
exactly.
have sunk this picture.
Well, we'll skip it, I guess.
20 years from now, there's going to be somebody making fun of the fact that there's no cops in this movie.
But, all right, so I'm in high school, and I'm James Spader, and I can actually handle myself in a fight, and, like, somebody's fucking with me, I want to get his girl, and I'm like, I'll fucking fight that guy. He has 3 friends with pipes. Okay, I still kind of really like this girl. Maybe in a universe, I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to fight this guy, and we're going to be romantic rivals. The second that guy shoots my dad in the chest, I'm going to the cops. It's just time. That's attempted murder, pal. And that solves all your problems also.
Oh, yeah. This dude, and, you know, whatever. We're getting to the end of the movie here. The cops never come into this movie. It doesn't get handled the way it should get handled, which is also the easy way. So, you know, as you would do, your dad's in the hospital. Your family's torn apart. Everybody hates your guts. You know, you should probably be calling the police, but maybe if you don't want to call the police, think about getting revenge on this dirtbag. Now, you know what? Stop for a second and just fuck this chick for an afternoon.
Well, you've earned it, I guess. I mean, at that point, what else are we doing here?
And it is a hairy sex scene. Because this actress has a lot of hair, right? It's crimped. It's down to her ass.
I would watch how you phrase that. We're in the 1980s.
No. I mean, I don't mean hairy like, oh, man, you know, bush. I just mean this girl's got a lot of head hair, and it's taken up the whole frame.
It looks like 2 chickens fucking. Because all you can see is all these feathers. They're just pushing against each other.
And, you know, Spader's got a nice coif on him, too.
Absolutely.
By the way, this is where you see, and you kind of notice it earlier in the movie, but you definitely get a good glance at here. James Spader has a spade tattoo on his arm, and that shit is totally real. I was looking at some screen caps from some other early Spader movies, and that tattoo is front and center. Yikes.
Yeah.
If you had a last name that sounded like one thing, would you get that one thing? Like, Chris, would you get a small house tattooed on your arm? A little...
A cottage?
Yeah, Chris Cottage. Like, you know, you have a nice little Abraham Lincoln, you know, house in the
middle. I mean,
well,
that's the promise, because I have the Abraham Lincoln portrait on my stomach.
So you get Abe Lincoln's, you know, wooden cottages, little log cabin off on the side. I mean, it makes no goddamn
sense. I feel like
sense.
Steven Soderbergh was like, quit this shit. Just get it off. I got you nude in this fucking movie. Just get rid of it.
So, you know, now it's on, and this dude... Basically, we got to get to the end of this movie. Spader drops this chick off for her shift at the liquor store on his bicycle. They have a little kissy kiss, have a nice afternoon. Maybe I'll fuck you again tomorrow. Maybe if my dad dies, I'll really need you.
And the dad's still trying to sell her on Nick when she comes in. He's the first word that is, I was like, well, you know, Nick, you know, he's under a lot of pressure at his job there or something.
I mean, he picked up that Porsche. I mean, he might do a dime for that.
You're going to have to support your husband while he's in prison.
I gave it to him. What do you want from me? And thankfully, Nick shows up and he's throwing this woman around. And he throws her around twice. The dad doesn't move. He slaps her. Then the dad's like, all right, Nick, let's take it down one notch. How about it?
How are we supposed to be best buds if you're going to do this to my daughter?
Like, you could abuse her a little bit, but don't do it right in front of me. Come on, Nick.
Nick, right before we were going to do the father-son fishing trip together. Really?
I know we're all human, buddy. So he takes this old man and throws him into a stack of liquor bottles. And it's pretty funny.
It's a Superman 2 throw into something. It's a destroyed building.
Nick body slams her. Like, she gets the fucking rock bottom done on her. She hits the ground. He flips out. And then he makes her call James Spader.
Who's making tea, by the way.
Again, it's this thing where he's like, you know, things are kind of working out here. It's not going to be so bad. Finally had sex with my girlfriend.
My dad still got 12% brain activity. All right, maybe we'll make a little tea. A little bit of tea.
And so then, like, she calls and, you know, she's like, listen, James Spader, he's going to kill me if you don't stop fucking around with me. And then this dude gets on the phone and he's like, warehouse, 6 p.m., settling this. We set up everything that we need to set up with one quick pit stop of this. James Spader walks into some random apartment that we've never seen before. There's a character we've never met, but it's really obvious we've totally met him in a deleted scene.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, like, James Spader walks into this apartment. He's like, oh, hey, Arbogast. And this dude's got a couple of dogs. And he's like, oh, hey, is Robert Downey Jr. here? And, you know, Arbogast is like, no, I haven't seen him since the last time we all hung out.
Hey, remember that time we got pizza together? No, I don't, Arbogast.
Right after you met Jim Carroll. I mean, you got to remember it. It was just a couple weeks ago.
And they just he leaves a note for RDJ and books it. And he goes to this warehouse. And this is where he gets all Batman. Like, he sneaks in. They're holding her hostage. It's just this dude, Nick, and, like, three other goons of his.
He's had two goons. They've multiplied into four goons because there's two goons at the beginning you haven't seen for an hour and a half.
Oh, that's right. The dude with the car antenna and other guy.
I mean, it's kind of like Station. They, like, separate and then they can go back together.
Station!
Ah, Station! Man, that is the worst fucking movie.
Stay tuned.
So, you know, he starts, like, taking these guys out like Batman, you know, one by one, very stealth-like.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a couple of dart guns that he's hitting people with and all this shit.
His leather jacket's made out of memory cloth.
I mean, James Spader outright swings on a rope and kicks this Nick guy right in the heart. Like, it's a Batman move.
Yeah. And, I mean, this fight kind of goes on forever. It just... first where he fights everybody off, and it looks like, oh my god, they finally, like, he fights everybody off. It's kind of like what they do with his dad. They just kind of overpower him, and Nick grabs his gun, and he's about to blow him one, and you're like, oh my god. In comes, it's the best fucking entrance he's made in his entire storied career.
Absolutely.
Oh no, this is much better than Iron Man.
Robert Downey Jr. with a fucking, I don't even, a Rottweiler on each arm, and he's like, hey! Hey, he's like, hey, cool it! And he has these two things, and he's holding it like, he's holding it really straight, and he's like, ha ha! And he lets them go, and the dogs know exactly what to do.
That's why we know that James Spader has hung out with RDJ, Arbogast, and these hounds in some deleted scene because these dogs know not to attack James Spader. Because if they hadn't hung out and had pizza, how would they have known which guy to attack? It's like, how do you leave such a hole in your movie?
There's that scene where they order the pizza, they're in the backyard, and like Robert Downey Jr. is picking off like pieces of pepperoni from one slice, and he's giving it to the dog. That's how we get it all done. That's how we've swiped that clean.
It's my favorite Deus Ex Machina. It's the third act super dog.
Which, oh, yeah.
You'll see that in Your Hills Have Eyes, where it's just like, wait, where did this super dog come from? Well, I'm with it, because these dogs are chasing them all around. One guy is so afraid of these dogs, he jumps out a window, and the dog says, fuck it, and follows him.
This dog, not stopping him. This dog's kind of at the end of his dog career, and he's like, I'm going to go out swinging. I'm going to go out biting. He jumps out this window. That dog doesn't know what kind of a drop he's dealing with. He's taking that guy straight to hell.
That dog's like, oh, you think I'm afraid of a little hell, huh? And just jumps.
You never see that dog or that man again, so it's quite possible they did indeed go to hell.
That throat is mine.
So, blah, blah, blah. James Spader throws this guy off a, you know, big drop like fucking Harvey Dent.
Robert Downey Jr. gets shot in the knee or whatever.
He instantly gets shot right. It's like right in the thigh. It's hilarious. Like, he's like, ha ha, dogs. And before the dogs can get to them, Nick's like, ha ha, gun. And he's, you know, can't help at all.
Bob, gun. Gun, Bob.
So he's dead. And, you know, they kind of, they have a little, you know, moment there of like, holy fuck, that's definitely the most dangerous thing that's happened to any of us. What could we possibly do after this?
Fade to black. And then we hear this.
JB, is that who I think that is?
Ain't that same woman I saw the other night, Mark?
Oh, Lord, everybody's got a treat. Move the tables.
I think I need an ambulance.
Oh, three or four nurses, too, because this girl is fine.
Oh, yeah, we are right back where we want to be. And it's great. And it's their fucking Cheers moment, man, because Jack Mack is like, oh, they're back, baby. Oh, clear the dance floor. Here they come.
He's got like put up his sound because, oh, it's her. Oh, she's back. Everybody get ready for the show.
Do I believe my Jack Mack eyes? Yes, I do. Hit it, boys. This fucking Tough Turf theme song is fantastic.
This movie has two titular songs.
Absolutely.
There's a Tough Turf song and Too Tough.
It's got to be some sort of a record. A shitty record, but it's a record. And I mean, they walk in, they're strutting around. And the last time we've seen them, like, both of them, bloodied, battered, bruised, really bad.
No, the next scene is the hospital.
Yeah, exactly.
Or as we're outside the warehouse where we've got police blankets. We're sitting there drinking coffee. You know, RDJ's on a stretcher. And he's like, oh, you know, you owe me one, man.
Yeah,
of those kind of ended.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, John McClane realizes that Jeremy Irons went to Canada for some reason. God, that's a stain on that movie.
That's a PSBS right
yeah,
there.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the deleted scene is even better. Not a conversation for right now. So they walk into this place. Spader's fucking swinging a pocket. Yeah, I mean, they're out for a night on the town.
Robert Downey Jr. has a cast? Like, it's like, that makes everything better? No, it doesn't.
Yeah, that's the only thing that's happened. You know, Kim Richards walks in like, man, I hope my life stays just like this. Sure hope I don't turn into an old crusty nothing on a Bravo television show.
Well, RDJ walks in, and it's not even like he has the cast on. But he's not limping. He's walking normal.
No. He's totally
He's kind of dancing. Like, everybody's kind of dancing. And now it's like, then we're in the credits. And the whole credit sequence is them having fun with the heart attack.
They are on stage. The last shot of the movie is Robert Downey Jr. playing a saxophone. Or he's got a trumpet or some shit.
And everybody else is pretending to play the saxophone. And Jack Mack's like, all right, man, this party's going to go all night.
If you want to dance, Jack Mack make you dance.
Jack Mack needs some cocaine. In all seriousness, Jack Mack needs some cocaine.
Jack Mack's the kind of guy you're partying with and you... Like, you know when you go to sleep when you're hanging out and partying and someone starts waking up, hey, man, we're not done yet.
You're not going to sleep, are you? Jack Mack's all right.
Where can Jack Mack get some rotisserie chicken?
How do you think I can get for an old Xbox on eBay these days?
How much you give me to drink all this pickle juice? He is one of those guys that makes up annoying food concoctions and does the old, how much for me to eat this?
Yeah, he's always asking you to dare him to do something.
For money.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. And that's tough turf. Oh, my God.
I'm going to start it off. I think it's the strongest recommend I have for this entire project of 90-some-odd episodes in, a couple of mini-episodes. Tough Turf's my favorite out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weak recommend for me.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be the top because On Deadly Ground's got the top. That's a conversation that's been called already.
Okay.
Cal Rain. But I mean, it keeps your attention mostly because of Spader, I'd say. And I mean, it's just goofy enough to work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, Chris Cottage, you are on my bad side. This movie, I legitimately liked it. It's not to the point where I'm like, you know, I don't know what we're doing here.
No.
I mean, I know what we're doing here. But let me tell you, I catch this movie on again, I'm going to watch it. I had a legitimate time with this movie. This fucking soundtrack is great, solid, shitty 80s music, which I love. Big sucker for it. And that fucking Jack Mack, man, he is an entertainer. And he entertained me all of the 8 scenes that he had in this movie.
I kind of wanted the movie to iris out on him with just a ham bone in his teeth.
But, you know, Steve, I agree with you. You know, we're almost at 100 episodes of this program. And, you know, 500 years from now, when they dig up the We Hate Movies mainframe from some ice block... I want this to be the one where the aliens are like, man, they loved that fucking Tough Turf. Huh? And then they put it on and they're like, man, this race of people was stupid as fuck.
Do you get it? Wait, is she getting raped? Relbialar, come here. I think this woman's getting raped. What happened to the fun music?
Kremulak, have you ever known someone to live above a liquor store like that?
So that was a lot of fun, huh?
Like, you know, I want to watch the movie right now.
I guarantee you, I am going to watch this movie this summer. It's going to happen.
It's a good summer movie.
It's been about 2 years since I've seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since we did the... Can you believe that episode? It's episode number 97.
97 on the charts. And just falling down.
can you believe that James Spader went from this hunky, debonair young man to an old... heavy woman on the blacklist.
I still have not finished the first season of that show.
Oh, it's worth a watch.
I mean, just love that he's just killing people.
I mean, speaking of killing people, doing the James Spader math of what he looked like when he was 30 to now, I'm going to be 948 pounds when I'm when I'm 60 years old.
Yeah, like, we're all finished.
Just well, dead.
If it can happen to Spader...
Yeah, we should go out on top, gents. I think this, while you're listening to this, we might already be dead.
Entirely possible. This is filmed in the past.
Well, yeah. You're on your magic Weekend at Bernie's-esque Hamptons vacation. Who knows what's going to happen to you out there?
Maybe the twist is I'm the corpse people playing with. People playing with my dead body now. And a revelation, I'm seeing something from the future.
Oh, what?
It looks like Listener Request Month. Is coming back.
Oh, shit, dude.
November
2014.
Your picks on the air. We'll probably open the phone lines when we come back.
Yeah, I'd wager like sometime pretty soon to get those calls in.
I'm just imagining now, like, just like opening a convenience store that's been closed for the weekend. There's like some dust some places. You just got those jangly keys.
Oh, yeah, totally. You're seeing like, if someone remembered to turn the hot water off, they didn't. It's just been on, wasting gas.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty exciting.
Oh, shit, we left Chris Cabot in that car.
Oh, well, he's long dead.
He's so hot. We didn't even crack the window. Oh, fuck.
Ooh. So there's another
been the news lately, too.
Yeah, it is.
Thanks, Steve.
It's in the future now.
Well, it's in the future. It's in the news now. Hopefully, terrible parents stop doing it by the time this airs. Probably not, though.
And then, don't worry, I've reminded everyone about it. Oh, boy. Is good thing everyone, my face?
Good thing everyone's done laughing. The episode's over with.
Oh, yeah. But now you can go back to thinking about death.
So that's it. We got how many more of these?
You're up next, pal.
Oh, it's me. That's right. I'm not going to leave a hint. I'll say it's from a spooktacular.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of a hint.
Yeah, it's a hint. Yeah, it's from one of our spooktaculars. So that's like 12 episodes for you to go through.
Well, thank you very much, and we'll see you next week. And by that, I mean in a couple of weeks when we come back from vacation.